This is Art in Focus, brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Sasha Chuljin, class of 2024 and a McMullen student ambassador. I'd like to welcome you in listening to the second episode in a series on the exhibition Gateway to Himalayan Art. This episode will feature a conversation between Noah Ingram and Kelly Gray, two PhD students in the Boston College English Department.
So, hi there. I'm Kelly Gray, and I'm a fourth-year PhD student here in the English department at Boston College. And then my research really focuses in on the environmental humanities. I do 20th century and post-45 American literature on the Great Acceleration. So, more specifically, what that really means is that I focus in on how the environment and economy have changed following World War II, and thinking a lot about how literature and film kind of navigates all of those changes. So my current research is really going to be my dissertation project, and I will be combining psychoanalytic theory and this Great Acceleration literature to think about subjectivity today and the climate crisis.
Thanks, Kelly. Hi, my name is Noel Ingram, and I'm a PhD candidate in the English department with Kelly here at Boston College. And then something to note, although I'm in the English department, my primary focus is not literature. So I focus in a field that's called rhetoric and composition, which is loosely organized around the question, what can writing do in the world? More specifically, my work explores what's called community writing, which means I look at what so-called quote-unquote regular people write, as well as what we call multimodal composition. So that means writing that goes beyond alphabetic text. So instead of just looking at words on a page, I study things like visuals, the spaces and places in which we compose, and then the intersection of art and writing. At BC, I primarily teach first-year writing and literature core. This semester, I'm teaching an upper division elective called Crafting Activism, Democracy, Composition, and DIY Rhetorics. And then I also work with the Center for Digital Innovation and Learning as a digital pedagogy consultant. So what that means is I develop and facilitate design-based faculty programming, and then pilot new and emerging technology to think about their application in the classroom. And I think Kelly and I have similar interests in like space and place. Kind of to start talking about the artwork that we're going to be speaking about today, my entryway into the Gateway to Himalayan Art exhibit at the McMullen was part of a project that I designed for my class I'm teaching this semester, and I'm happy to talk about that in a little bit more detail later on. So today, Kelly and I are going to be talking about the Tibetan Buddhist Shrine Room, which is an immersive art experience that's on the second floor, or it's on the third floor of the McMullen. So you go one level up from where you enter. And so the space is incredible. It was designed, it's really, really nice. It was designed to replicate what you might find in an affluent Tibetan family household. So for that, it's the space of contemplation, to offer prayers, incense, food, or even money to the gods. And when you walk into the space, immediately you hear this like very peaceful sound of like chanting and bells. The lights are really dim. There's all these beautiful poofs that you can sit on. And then at the center, there's this shrine cabinet, which has like a dragon face in the center and all these intricately carved dragons, etches of flowers and clouds. It's just it's a really lovely space to sit and reflect and think about the artwork. So Kelly, I'm curious to know, because we haven't had a chance to talk about this yet. What was your kind of experience going up into that space?
Yeah, I mean, it was so fascinating. And I so love that you took your class there. Noelle and I both also lead the pedagogy seminar in the English department. So we're always thinking together about different ways of having creative assignments or having students just interact with art or subject matter in a new, really immersive way. So I think this is a really perfect example of exactly that, and a real perfect opportunity to have students just reflect on things and study form and content to make meaning in a new environment to practice those exact skill sets. So I was going into there with really all that in mind. I really liked that the placement, maybe this is a silly thing to note, but I really liked the placement of the interactive room at the very back of everything, because it felt like you were really prepared, like learning everything to be able to understand the kind of context historically, learning the symbology of everything to be able to understand what you were entering into. And then when you were really there, I also was really interested in the music playing and how it really immersed you into it. And yeah, I sat there for a long time, really taking it all in and thinking all about the different ways people would interact with it, especially in like a religious context on a day to day. I really like that quality to it.
Yeah. And something that I thought was really interesting, so that you bring up kind of like that you're primed to engage with it by the time you got to it. I didn't think about that as much, but I think that's a really good point. And thanks for bringing up the like project that I'm doing. So just for greater context, I made this project for my class that's called Mapping Composition. And so we went to the McMullen as our first location. And then I had students write somewhere outside of Boston College's campus in the greater Boston area, which could include Brighton or wherever kind of they were. And then the third
Chestnut
location
Hill.
Was Chestnut Hill, wherever they wanted to go. And then the third location was on BC's campus. And just think about like, what does it feel like? How does like space and place influence the way that you feel about writing? And so the day that I took them, I don't think I've told you this yet, Kelly, but the day that we went over was like so hot. The humidity, it was like one of the worst times ever. Like I was drenched.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
I was drenched in sweat by the time I got there. I felt terrible. Like all of my students were like standing in front of the museum and I was like, I'm so sorry that this is the worst weather ever.
Is there AC in there?
So there was like AC in the museum, which was
wonderful.
Which was
more reasons to go.
Yeah, which was delightful. And then by the time we got to the like this portion of the exhibit, it was just like such a break in the hustle and bustle of the school year, also just the terrible weather outside. And like I felt myself just like a weight kind of go out of like off of me and just really, really relax. And so I was just, yeah, I was just so struck with the way that the environment and how it kind of recentered, like not only for myself, but also for my students, and thinking about like, why are we here? What are we doing? Like, what does it feel like to be fully engaged in learning? So I think, yeah, it was an interesting time to go. And I know you went a little bit later, so I'm curious to know like kind of what was your experience?
I love that you took that class there for that assignment. I didn't bring my class there for this one other one, but I similarly was interested in thinking about space and assignments with my class at the very beginning of the semester. So my current elective is the Great Acceleration. So literally my topic is study. So very fitting there. But we began the semester with Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. So like the kind of like foundational text for early environmentalism and the movement within the United States. And that text really begins through this anecdote that she includes in like the acknowledgments, thanking her friend, so Olga Huckins down on the South Shore. And it's all about listening to your environment and becoming aware of it in a new way. Because basically, in short, yeah, Silent Spring, the name of it, is referring to the fact that it became silent because all the birds were dying from DDT being sprayed everywhere. And so this woman like wrote a letter to the editor of the Boston Herald all about how all the birds in her sanctuary had passed away. And so we really took that as a starting point of learning to listen to silence in my classroom and to really think about what it means to take what's normally background and bring it into the foreground and like meditating on things in a new way and that kind of like economy of attention. And I think that this would have really perfectly fit into that, just in the sense of having students listen in and really interact with it as part of a collaborative experience. Because what I was so struck by entering into this room is the fact that it's not just an art object you're looking at, but one that you're interacting with by virtue of just being there in the space. And like by having it be a religious experience in that way, it's all about the way in which you interact with it. So I was really thinking about art as like a collaborative happening in that way, which I really am fascinated by.
Yeah, I love that. I think too, like one of the things I admire so much about the way that you engage is like your research work, but then also the way that you translate that into the classroom is Kelly Gray is probably the best person I've ever met in terms of explaining theory and making it something that is accessible and that makes sense. No, seriously, like the way that when you're bringing like students or yourself or you're going out into the world and you're talking about like how you're framing it as a happening or you're framing it in terms of the like economy of attention, it makes what we're doing in terms of our research or in terms of academia like matter a lot more for not only students, but just to see those connections between like, here's the theory and this is lived experience. And those two things don't have to be completely separate. And so I think that's really, really cool about your work. And another thing
I think your work, oh, sorry, no, you go. I was just going to say that you are equally, if not the master at just creative assignments. So I think that the way that you bring your students into environments like this and use this opportunity to really have them reflect on different things and apply, you know, the skill sets they're learning. I mean, there's no better place to do that than bringing them to a campus setting that, you know, they've maybe passed by, they know is there, but maybe they haven't interacted with fully yet. So, you know, perfect advertisement also for the McMullen in that way.
Yeah. Aw, thanks, Kelly. That's so sweet. I'm equally in awe of you. And I think something that's really cool and where there's a parallel thinking deeply about, like, I can't remember exactly what you said, but it was something about seeing yourself as part of a larger system and framework. What did you say?
Oh, like interactive, collaborative experience?
Maybe.
One of those words. That works. You can talk more on that.
That works. And I think it fits so well, or one of the things that I think works so well at Boston College in particular is, like, because BC has such an emphasis on formative education, which I know is this term that gets thrown around a lot, but I think...
Break it down, yeah.
Yeah. Like, what I think about it, it's how are you looking at your experience as a student holistically and bringing together, like, all of these different components of your life and approaching teaching in that way. And I think part of that is reflection. And I think that goes back to, like, you know, Jesuit pedagogy of there's a lot of emphasis on reflection. But I think it also has an ethic to it that is something that I think we're both really invested in terms of, like, okay, what does it mean then to be a person in the world? And I think BC talks a lot about, like, men and women for others, but I feel like the way that both of us do our work, it's like, it's not just for other individuals, but, like, also for the world and for, like, thinking about the environment and, like, how everything and making connections between, like, the past, like you're saying with, like, Rachel Carson's Silent Spring and what that brings to bear on environmental issues today.
Yeah. And I think that, like, what you're saying, it's so true also with how this is, like, this exhibit is about something that could have been in someone's home, you know, would be in someone's home. And I think reflecting on things that are in ordinary life in that way is so important because it brings, like, an attention and a critical thought to our everyday experience and makes just, like, it makes for a well-rounded person to be able to understand, you know, beauty and meaning all around you in that way. So I completely agree about, like, the purpose of, I mean, liberal arts education in that way. And I'm curious also, I want to hear all about, like, what you took away with your class altogether from this experience through, like, a community writing lens. Like, what were the reflections and insights you guys gained?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I was really, I mean, this was pretty experimental. I'd never done anything like this exactly with my students before. And then I was reading their reflections and I was just completely awestruck with how intelligent and thoughtful the students that are I have in my class at BC are. And so one thing that one student said that really stood out to me, so a lot of the readings that class is engaging with are, like, feminist theory, and we had just read a piece about, like, intersectionality. So we talked about, like, Kimberly Crenshaw. We were doing we were just kind of looking at, like, what does it mean to have intersectional feminism? And one of my students, like, sat and wrote in response to a piece that was, and I don't remember the exact piece, but it was one of the pieces where it shows the life of the Buddha. And it's, like, the image of the Buddha and it's flat and it kind of is all in these different places, and was talking about how that is, like, reminded her of intersectionality, how you can be, like, all of these different, you can have all these different components of your life and have that be something that, like, together kind of makes up who you are. And I was like, you're brilliant. And then a second thing is so there's a series of object essays that were published in conjunction with this exhibit. And so it looks really just goes in depth and pairs research, and talks about, like, different objects that are in the exhibit. And so we looked at it is, like, reading it for craft. So thinking about, like, how are these constructed? How do you talk about material culture in a way that is accessible and makes sense? And one of my students is working on, so their final project is they have to pick a contemporary or historical social movement and then identify rhetorical strategies used by that movement, and then in partnership with the makerspace make something using those totally new using those rhetorical strategies, or remediate something from that social movement using a tool in the makerspace. And so she was talking about how the way that, like, some of the artwork was composed made her think differently about, like, how she was going to construct her final project for the class, which I thought was really cool because I'm not an expert in Himalayan anything, and this class is not about that, but kind of taking the insights from that. So I've seen it kind of come up in different places throughout my class.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I was just going to say that.
No, thank you. I was going to ask you for your opinion.
Yeah. Well, before that, I just want to say that I really like the way you take like a project-based and process-based approach to your pedagogy, and how students are able to like literally learn through doing in that way. And I think studying something and then making something, reflecting on like objects as such and material cultures in that way, one, makes for a memorable learning experience, but also just gives students more of a reason to like be invested in what they're doing. And I think with something like this, to like find investment in a religious object, one, is beautiful, but two, is a way of having them reflect on their own practices and really study themselves as well and like see themselves in dialogue with that. Were you going to ask about how psychoanalysis fits in? Because that's a tall order.
I was going to ask, in terms of your...
I have a thought.
Okay, yeah. I want to know all of your thoughts.
Okay, I'll break it down. So, with psychoanalysis, the way they talk about it a lot is like the scopic field. So thinking about the visual field and how the subject is part of that. And what that all really means is the idea that when you're viewing something, you are part of what you're viewing. So the way you're understanding it and constituting meaning through it, like the subjectivity is part of making that happen. You're always in what you see. And so like an example of that, the really famous painting, if you know it, the one where there's like a smudge in the middle, but if you look askew, looking awry, you can see that it's skulls. You know that old painting?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I should know the title. Yeah. But with that one, it's this idea of that stain being the gaze, quote unquote. And what that means is that like you're basically looking back at yourself, and that's the part in the painting where it like eludes you. Like that is thinking all about subjectivity being in it, but also the fact that it is like incomplete, yeah. If that all is making sense. But basically the application to it in terms of this exhibit is again just thinking about like the subject's place within it, and the fact that you're bringing so much to this object. Like, had you gone in, for example, without this context, without having gone through, you know, all of the exhibit and learning everything prior to walking into this room, you might not have the context to understand like the religious aspect to it. You know, like certainly you'd have an immersive experience by virtue of the fact that, you know, there's music playing, you're invited into this room to interact with things. But I think the fact that it is religious, you have that context and you're going in to interact with it, it's about then having your subjectivity be part of it and like feeling like feeling as part of it and understanding your role in this experience. So I think in a way that it really lends itself to it. And this might seem like a random connection, but it made me think of minimalist artwork as well.
Oh, interesting.
Obviously,
how?
This is far. I mean, like, it's far from minimalist, right?
Yeah.
It is, like, it's a thing as opposed to a cube. I mean, maybe that's ungenerous towards minimalist art. I really am a fan. But that's, again, also, like, say it's a cube, again, ungenerous. But it's all about your body and your interaction with it and, like, thinking about, like, yourself related to it and how like you're part of it. So like even if that experience, you know, imagine it's a student going in being like, I could make that. Even that is them thinking about themselves in relation to it. But you know, more often than not, you'll be thinking about like walking around an object, how you interact with it, and thinking then about that experience with you. So I think there's like a real resonance there, and also a resonance with your work in terms of like community writing and interaction and just like literally doing in that way.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I mean, I think you bring up a really good point. And there's something you were saying too about the like feelings and like kind of having that be a part of it is just, I think, something that is so prevalent in like feminist theory and in thinking about like emotion being a form of epistemology. So like, you know, Cartesian dualism, and you have the separation of the mind and the body. And then what does it mean to have emotions in your body be something that you're like not only experiencing the world through, but that is a knowledge claim in and of itself. And so I think like part of what's really exciting about the ability to go to like a different space like the Macmillan is you can read about embodiment or having, you know, emotions and like bodily experience be part of like creating knowledge, but until you do it, it's, you don't have the same experience. And I think,
yeah. I wonder how standpoint theory would fit in as well, like within like feminist work. Like, what do you think about that? Like making meaning in, I guess, an epistemological framework through like the partial perspectives there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think that's, I'm happy you bring that up because that was something that I was thinking a lot about. And what you're saying too of like the, I'm going to get the phrasing wrong that you used, but the like seeing your, having your own subjectivity be part of the experience.
Yeah. Nailed it.
And having like, one of the things that was exciting about being able to bring a class is you do have these partial experiences, but then everybody's bringing their own life experience, their own background, and then together, like what the experience that we were able to take away from visiting this exhibit is unique because of the people involved, because of the background that they bring and the insights that they bring. So like as a community, we had a really special experience that can't be replicated and that is greater than, like, it's in excess of what either one of us, like, going individually would have been able to do.
Yeah, I love that. And, like, teaching is being an active thing that happens together, you know, like, it's an alive thing that you can't necessarily anticipate. Like, it's a coming together of different people. I think that also fits what you're saying in terms of, like, again, like, the values of, like, Lit Core, for example, and the core curriculum at BC at large, in terms of like the community aspect and bringing people together in that way. Like you're saying that all the students brought away different meetings because of what they brought in being so different. And I think that would probably, I'd imagine, would make for a really like wonderful conversation where people learn more about each other and likely about themselves as well.
Well, and I think something too that was, I completely agree. And I like that you're bringing up the core as well, because you know, the goal of a liberal arts education and the goal of the core is for there to be kind of this exposure to and then like intersection between all these different fields that you wouldn't otherwise experience. And something that was really interesting was like, I had students who were like, oh, I took a like a class on Buddhism and therefore like knew a lot content of what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And students were kind of drawing connections between other classes that they'd taken. And
I love that.
You know, I didn't have that knowledge, like I'm not an expert in Buddhism, but like being able to able to make those connections. And I think it's something that's so beautiful, like in our quote-unquote post-COVID world where you couldn't do that, like a couple years ago we couldn't all be in the same space together, and you like have this kind of beautiful serendipity that comes out of like in-person classroom experiences or in-person learning experiences that I find really special. And it's something that, yeah, I really value about being able to teach in-person classes.
Yeah. That reminds me also, like not now, but in prior classes I've taught, including first year writing, interestingly, I thought a lot about interpretation and intertextuality and like what people bring to things. And the way we did it, we were thinking about like interpretive communities, and I'm drawing upon like Stanley Fish there, but the idea of making meaning based on like a context, you know, and that being like all about kind of like, well, for that would be the readers, but here it could be viewers as well, rather than just the object itself in such an interesting way. Though like, I always bring this up when I'm teaching a teaching about critical theory and about like interpretation at large, like kind of how to recognize a poem when you see one, that essay, I think it's like excellent. But to like summarize it really in short, it's basically this guy's going in to teach a class, right? And on the chalkboard when he enters into the room is this leftover list from the class prior, which was a random literature class, right? And it has all these names on the board that were likely just required readings for the students. But the class entering into it was a religious poetry class. And all the students seeing all these names that were left, you know, by the person prior thought it was for them. So they all get to work in the classroom and have this beautiful meaning they make from it. Like they have a whole thesis, that. Like a whole essay they build collaboratively as a class before the guy walks in, right? And he's taking that away, saying, like, this is an interpretive community making meaning based on their own rhetorical context. And I think you could do that with, like, any art object. Like, the way I've taught it in class has often been, like, with a painting. I do the Fall of Icarus, that one. And, like, yeah, I, like, ask students, like, what they see in it, you know, and slowly we bring in further context, like, intertextuality. I tell them who Icarus is, you know, and I point him out. literally dying in the background. And then suddenly we have new meaning being made, but it's not to neglect the meaning originally made. It's instead to think about art as collaboration and the meanings that are possible, which I think is really instructive for, intro lit students to be able to understand.
Well, and I think that's such a beautiful, I love that you bring up intertextuality, and I love what you do with intertextuality in your classes. And I think it's such a, I think one of the reasons that a lot of people get turned off of studying English literature in particular, mm-hmm. is this kind of tendency to be there are these clues that I must unlock in order to discover the secret meaning of this text. When what you're talking about, and I think, it's something that is a reframe of what does it mean to make meaning from a text? What does it mean to put text in conversation mm-hmm. with each other? And it's not that there is this secret one way to read something, but what you're mm-hmm. talking about is these interpretive meanings that come out of community and that come out of collaboration and that come out of one's, own experiences and one's relationship to the world. And I love that you're and also the ability to look at a text broadly. So is that an art piece? Is that something that, I feel the essay you're talking about, it's a form of found poetry. You found these things on the board, and then from that we're able to create new meaning. And I find that really exciting and generative.
I guess, what is it, the reparative reading as opposed to paranoid reading?
Yes.
What's the meaning versus we're making meaning?
Yeah, East Sedgwick.
The best. I'd like to hear more about your class, if you don't mind, especially in terms of what you guys did afterwards, following your visit.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So we made a Google map. So you know how you can make maps on Google and you can put the different locations. And so they put a pin for wherever they mm-hmm. visited. So it was kind of all at the McMullen. And then they had to take a photo, take video, or do an audio recording, and then attach that to the pin along with a snippet of whatever they wrote. So I had them just sit and write for 10 minutes about stream of consciousness, whatever they wanted to talk about, and then reflect on their writing and their experience. And so what ended up happening is now we have this Google map that has all of these different points that are plotted both at the for the McMullen, at BC's campus, and then throughout Boston, with these little snippets of video or photography and of writing. And then we came back together and we would talk about it after every time. So what did you learn? How did you feel writing in these different spaces? And some students chose stuff where they were or locations were oh, I really like this, so I know I'm going to go there. I had one student who was I want to put myself in challenging situations. Not in an unsafe way, but she went to a
where'd they go?
A football game, I think. And she was it's really loud and I'm going to see what it's to write in a really loud location. And she was contrasting it with the Tibetan, with the shrine room, and then thinking about how noise and busyness of the atmosphere around you influences the way you feel about writing and what you're able to write.
I love that.
So yeah, it was really fun.
I love soundscape stuff in that way.
You've done so much with soundscapes. Talk about your work and
my niche passion. Over the summer, I did this whole project all on Rachel Carson. So again, Silent Spring and early environmentalism, but it's all about listening to the sounds around you. And since all of all of nature is dying in the 60s because of DDT being sprayed so indiscriminately, I went to her home in Silver Spring, Maryland, and then her cabin up in Maine. They call it it's Silver Ledges or something, the cabin, though I've learned that that's not the name that she herself called it, which is fascinating. But anyway, I went and I recorded the soundscapes of those two environments. So that way you could identify the birds within it and think about the return of them, what she must have heard prior, and we have lists of all the birds that she herself would document hearing. And you could then think about what it would mean to have that noise gone and to listen to the silence and actually hear, the trouble that was happening in terms of the environment. And I just think that learning to listen in that way is so imperative. And I think really connects, once again, with this exhibit and really focusing on what's around you and learning what it means. So yeah, I think soundscapes are such a unique way of getting students to think critically about themselves in the world. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah. I feel like that's maybe a good note to end on. Like, yeah.
We circled back. Yeah. So to conclude, I suppose, I feel like we really ran the gambit in terms of everything we talked about.
we really did.
Yeah, I mean, as always. But I think our main takeaways have really been about, like, community in that way and the meaning that can be made through coming together, bringing different perspectives, and then reflecting on it afterwards, like, especially like you did with your costume and the meanings each student then contributed to the larger discussion. And I think that that's like a perfect reason to have students go all together to a place to reflect on something and realize the diversity of perspectives and what that can offer. So I think that really what we talked about is why people should go to the McMullen.
I think you're right. Was this whole thing just a promo? No.
An effective one, yeah. I hope.
Well, I'm so glad that I got to talk with you, Kelly. As always, I love talking with you.
I love talking with you too, Noelle. Okay.
That concludes this episode. While this exhibition is no longer in view at the museum, you can still see it using our virtual walkthrough online. To access the virtual walkthrough, visit mcmullenmuseum.bc.edu/exhibitions/Himalayan. Thank you for listening. And be sure to visit The Terrace, the McMullen student publication, to find more episodes like this. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the McMullen graduate assistant and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Sasha Chulgin and Megan Streeter. Thanks to Rachel Chamberlain, the McMullen Manager of Education, for her guidance and support. Finally, thank you to our podcast team.